Joining us on the line now is Paula Delgado Kling, who was born in Colombia. But when she was 9 years old, her family had to quickly uproot and move to Toronto, Canada, because a rebel group, the M19, was plotting to kidnap one of them, possibly her. Her book, Leonor, is a compelling true story about a former child soldier. Paula followed Leonor for 19 years, from shortly after she was an active member, forced into sexual slavery by a commander 34 years her senior, through her rehabilitation and struggle with alcohol and drug addiction, to more recent days as the mum of two girls. Welcome to the show, Paula.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. Great to chat with you. So there were kind of two stories here. The story of Leonor, which obviously I want to ask you about. That's the book. But I also want to ask you about your story as well and your family's story. What was it like growing up in Colombia? Do you remember much about it if you left when you were nine?
Oh, I do. It was great. We did leave, but summers and any holidays up from school, we would always return because family was there and home was there. We tried to return for the holidays during the whole time I grew up.
Yeah. And tell us about the experience of having to leave then. What happened with that?
The 1980s, before there was talk of the FARC or other groups that followed, the M19 were a group of young revolutionaries. They say they fell into it because of the Cuban Revolution and Trotsky and Vietnam and the hippies. And they thought to bring the political struggle to the cities, away from the countryside and into the cities where the political and economic class were, so that they could push for more change more quickly. They began to kidnap who they believed could pressure the government to make changes. And in February of 1984, the daughter of one of our family's business competitors was kidnapped. And my family's in the construction business. And that day, my father came home. He did not change into his pajamas right away, but he got on the phone and he began to figure out what he was going to do with us. Within 3 days, we had uprooted and settled in Toronto, Canada.
Gosh, and I'm assuming you had no idea what was happening. You didn't understand what was happening, did you?
As a nine-year-old might, but not in depth. And that was the motivation for the book, to try to figure out what had happened and why, and who were the main actors.
Yeah. And tell us about your brother's kidnapping.
Several years later, as I mentioned, we would still go back and forth and we still live there with one foot in. He had gone through boarding school away from Colombia. He'd gone through university away from Colombia. And he decided that he wanted to return to Colombia and contribute there. You often hear of the brain drain. He was very adamant that he wanted to use his education to come back to Colombia and work there. And within 6 months, he was working in an engineering startup, armed man with army backgrounds, like common thugs, but with army backgrounds, came into the office and they put everyone up against the wall and they asked to show IDs. And I don't know why people did. And in a couple of minutes, they had him in a car and they switched. It was all very well planned and they switched cars several times. And he was in a room for 6 months, kidnapped. But I want to say that this is something that happens in Colombia quite frequently. There was a statistic that not so long ago that somebody in Colombia is kidnapped every 3 hours. But I believe it's more. Yeah. But I believe it's more than that because a lot of it is not reported.
Gosh, even now that's happening.
It's getting worse again. Yes. Canada actually just put out a travel warning for tourists to be careful in Colombia, Canadians to be careful.
What are the kidnappings generally connected to? Why are certain people targeted?
It used to be certain people, and now it's everybody. I had a cousin that was kidnapped for hailing a cab, and they held her until she could go to the ATM 2 or 3 days in a row, and then they let her go. It's pure money, 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 money.
Wow, that's awful. And I mean, how was your brother after being in a room for 6 months? That must have been horrendous.
Yes, he's very resilient, though. Very resilient. And as I mentioned in the book, he used the time wisely to read. He exercised a lot. He was able to channel energy and the feelings. He read Don Quixote. That was one of the things he read. And then he did sorts of workouts that he was used to doing because he, in high school, he was on the crew team.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. So tell us about this Leona and how you came to meet her and why you decided to share her story.
I went to grad school at Columbia in New York in the International Affairs program. And I wanted to write a paper about soldiers and minors in the conflict. And I could not find any information. And this was 2001. And the conflict has been going on for 40 years. I decided that I would go back to Colombia and figure out how to report about this. I thought it was going to be a minor article in a woman's magazine or a small paper. And it turned into 19 years because I was so fascinated by her story. And I just found myself wanting to return to Bogota to hear more and more about her recovery. I first met her in July 2001. She was living in a group home in Bogota, halfway home, with other teenagers who had also been part of armed groups. I kept in touch with her every couple of months. I would go back to Bogota to see her, or we would be in touch through the telephone, even through Facebook.
Wow. And how did that start for her? How did she end up being part of one of these groups as a teenager?
She was born in Putumayo, which is the south of Colombia. And she was born in one of these little hamlets that's essentially a drug hub. A drug trafficking central drug hub. The FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, are part of her environment, her community, her family, her friends. She would have a lot of arguments with her mother because her mother was overwhelmed because her mother had a lot of children and she started having a lot of children very young. Her mother had a child every year, 2 years, starting when she was 14. She could not cope, her mother. Leonor would get into a lot of arguments with her mother and end up leaving her house. And on a couple of occasions, her mother kicked her out of the house. She found the camps, the FARC camps, which were nearby on the periphery of the town of Mocoa through the mountains and walking distance. And she started to see them more as compassionate to the domestic abuse that she was suffering at home. And she started to spend more and more time there, and she realized she could get food there. She could sleep semi-comfortable, better than on the streets if she had to stay out on the streets. She came back and forth many times until one day an older commander took notice of her, and that was the end. She never came home after that, or at least could come home after that.
What happened then? What did he do?
She became the commander's first girl, so to speak. That's what she liked to call it, the compañera or the first girl, the first lady kind of thing. He was a pretty high up commander, the fourth highest ranking in that front. She became a sexual slave for him. And she was a young girl, a minor, and he was 34 years her senior.
Gosh, and how, I mean, when she, how, I just can't even imagine what that was like. How did she talk about that when she reflected back at that time? How did she feel about it?
Well, the reason it took me such a long time to write and to report the book was because she wasn't ready to tell me. There were a lot of issues. First, she suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. And in order to survive, she had reframed certain memories in her head. For her not to be the victim. Through therapy, it took time to finally accept that she had been a victim, that was not a relationship, that it was rape, that it was not consensual. And then secondly, there were a lot of things in her story that she couldn't put together in the same way that you said a minute ago. Oh, did you know that at 9 years old? It was the same with her.
Yeah.
She had to rely a lot on her mother's help to put the pieces together of what had happened, when and where and why they left a certain town, why they were displaced.
So she did. She was able to go back to her mother then.
I don't want to wreck the book for people, but she...
Sorry.
It's okay. The good thing is she went back. She rekindled a relationship with her mother and some of her family members. And she's now back home in Mocoa. And she's raising her two little girls alongside other nieces and nephews and the help of her mother. But the problem is that while she had a lot of government-sponsored therapy and she went through a lot of help to rebuild her life, when she returned, her community and her family are the same. It's still drug central. It's still people coming back and forth from the armed groups. There's still a culture of violence and of domestic abuse. There's still a lot of state that is not there. There's no hospitals, really. There's no schools. There's no daycare for her. One of the reasons that her mother had a lot of children was because she did not have access to birth control. While Lenore was able to get away, and the silver lining of her having been a minor in an armed group was that she found the government and the government tried to help her to rebuild her life and to see it in another way.
Yeah.
But her community, when she goes back, is the same. At least she's able to give a little bit more positiveness to her two little girls.
It must be so difficult to go back, you know, to feel like you know, to have gone through all that therapy and to feel like you're in a better space personally and in your own head to go back to a community that hasn't really changed. That must be incredibly difficult.
And the family, the siblings, a lot of generations of siblings, really.
Yeah. I mean, they always say it's really difficult, near impossible for a lot of people who are born into these kinds of communities with a lot of gangs and crimes and violence going on. It's very difficult to escape that or not be part of that if you're still living within it. You know, if you move countries, move towns, whatever, then it's possible, even if, but that in itself is difficult. But if you're living there, how can she kind of, I don't know, how is she able to live a normal life with all of that going on around her?
Governments and the United Nations and all those human rights groups, they say it's better that she goes back to her family and has some sort of nucleus within her family, because otherwise she might be completely alone in a place that's not really hers. It's always the reintegration of the family that's the priority.
Right. And how does she feel? Obviously, she's helped you massively with this book, with you being able to speak to her a lot. How does she feel about you writing a book about her story?
In part, it's her personality that she's a protagonist. She likes attention. I feel very grateful that she talked to me, that she was open and welcoming. And there was still a lot of affection in her. I tried a lot of girls and they didn't respond as kindly.
Mm-hmm. And do you know how her family feel about the book?
I do know that her live-in boyfriend... She always has a boyfriend. That's the thing with Lenore. She always had a boyfriend. Her live-in boyfriend wasn't too happy. There were a few times where he would pick up the cell phone and I could tell by his voice, well, what do you want with her?
Mm.
A protectiveness, I suppose, as well.
Yeah.
When we first met and I wrote down what she would say about her mother, she was very, very harsh on her mother when we first met in 2001. And then going through her whole story by 2018, 2019, she asked that I be really kind to her mother, that she was in a really horrible situation with so many kids and that she had done her best. It was growth that she rekindled a friendship with her mom, a relationship, and she wanted to protect her.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I mean, as you say, family is so important, and for her to have gone through that with her mother and forgiven her and talked about it and been able to come to a good place with her is brilliant, isn't it?
Yes. She even returned home to Mocoa during the government program to give birth to her first child.
Wow.
by her mother's side. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's an amazing story. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us a bit about it. If people want to know more, they need to get the book. The book is called Leonor, and it's by Paola Delgado Kling. It's available on our website, tre.radio. Paola, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.